please hang up?
Okay, so welcome to Parshas Va'era. And since we did not meet last week, I was in Chicago for the Agudas Yisrael Midwest Convention, which we'll talk about in a minute. So we'll just say something of Parshas Shmos to get things going. And in Parshas Shmos, it's interesting. There's a repetition, almost a repetition, of something that comes at the end of Parshas Vayechi. Has Parshas Vayechi end? Vayamas Yosef ben Meiv Esrim Shana. It talks about the Petira of Yosef, and that's how Parshas Vayechi ends. But then in Parshas Shmos, so the Pasuk tells us, Ubnei Yisrael paru, vayishritzu, vayirbu, vayatzu, v'moid moid, v'timolei haaretz oisam. And the Jewish people, they increased, they multiplied. You know, we have to take out the arts call to see all the different lashonos. But basically, they became, as it says, the Bnei Yisrael Mitzuyanim Shem, that there were just so many of them. And of course, what happens is, when there are many Jews, it unfortunately causes a reaction, as we see very, very much in our own day, that Baruch Hashem, as the Yidden increase, they become part of the fabric of the society, and there becomes a reaction, unfortunately, and we're familiar with that. And there's two types. There's an tziv, Rabbi Menachem Greenblatt. I had the schus of introducing him on Motzai Shabbos. We had a session on anti-Semitism, and he spoke. There's a landmark tziv which talks about anti-Semitism. Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, the great Volozhin Rosh Hashiva. And he talks about anti-Semitism. By the way, just agav, there's a big machloikis in the world whether you spell anti-Semitism with a hyphen or without a hyphen. And what's the nafgamina between the two? Is that the nafgamina is that if it's with a hyphen, it's less of a madrega. It means there's anti-chves, antibacterial. There's anti-this, there's anti-that. There's also anti-Semitism. It makes it just one of many. If you make it into one word, then it's anti-Semitism. That's something unique in the whole world, which of course we know is true, because anti-Semitism exists whether Jews are socialists or capitalists, whether they're rich or they're poor, whether they're, it doesn't matter. So, anti-Semitism is, whether you're on the left or on the other right. They talk about, the alt-left anti-Semitism and the alt-right anti-Semitism. It's something, and the Nitziv grapples with this. What is going on? Is this just coincidental? How's that possible? How's it possible that 200 nations, the United Nations, could vote consistently against one nation, and how Israel could be the most maligned, have endless different votes against it throughout? It's not shaykh. So how do we understand anti-Semitism? Of course, it was before the State of Israel, but anti-Semitism, unfortunately, with the pogroms, were vicious, and that's why so many people came to America. So he talks about the two types of anti-Semitism. And one is the classic ace of anti-Semitism. We all know about Esav. It says Yaakov, the year of Yaakov is very afraid of the anti-Semitism of Esav. And that's the brutal type of anti-Semitism, the brutal of a Hitler, Yimach Shemai, a Stalin, Yimach Shemai. These are brutal murderers, and they're anti-Semitic, and you know they're anti-Semites. No question about it. They're anti-Semitic. There's a second type, called Miyad Achi, Miyad Esav. That's a second type we've also heard about. What does that mean? That sometimes Esav is your best friend. Esav can come out against you and assimilate you out of existence. He doesn't have to lift a finger. As we know that Esav, all the intermarriage, it's Esav. He's coming and he might be nice to you, but he assimilates you, invites you to the party. In a way, he's trying. He may not, in the classic sense of hating you, when he's Achi, he might love you, but he might put you out of business even faster than the other Esav. But what fascinated me is he said there's a third type of anti-Semitism. And I guess you call that anti-Semitism without an anti-Semite. And what do I mean? So if you take a look in Parshas Toldos, if you have a Chumash, take a look on page 90, Vayetze, page 90, and you have Yaakov is running away from Lavan. He's going with the whole family. He's running away from Lavan, right? So what does he do? He takes his mishpach and they're running. And Lavan catches up to them. Right? We all know the story. Lavan catches up. So what does Lavan do? Lavan gives him a whole speech. chutzpah, you should leave. Haban is banai. The boys are my boys. Haban is b'noisai. They're all mine. All mine. Right? You don't have, none of it's yours. This is all mine. And then he says, "L'natashtem l'nashik livni l'bnoisai ati skalta." So you've done bad. Pasachov test. Now listen what happens. Then Lavan says something which is just an amazing thing that he says. Here's Lavan, right? Lavan, Haramai, Rami, the Ramai, Lavan the Rasha. And what does he say? Hashem talks to him. Yesh le'el yadi lazi mechem ra. I could do for you bad. V'lokei avichem emish, Omer Eli, but your God told me, Lamor speaking to, I guess to say to you, he shamer lecham yidaber im Yaakov mitoy v'ra. Don't say anything to Yaakov from good to bad. So therefore, I'm not going to do anything to you. I could do it, but I'm not. Now, what did he say? He said, "Yesh le'el yadi lasi machem ra." I have in my power to do bad to you. And what did he say? What did Hashem tell him? Did Hashem tell him, "Don't do bad"? What did Hashem say? Don't do good or bad. He wasn't planning doing good. He was only planning doing bad. So why did Hashem say, "Don't do good or bad"? So he says, "Up the Netziv." That Lavan is the stealth anti-Semite. Lavan is an anti-Semitism that you don't even feel. You know, I remember once heard somebody say the difference between being cut by a razor blade and being with a knife is that the razor blade, you don't feel it right away. Later on, the pain is shreklich, but you don't feel it. So Lavan was there, he was cutting slowly. We'll explain in a second. But what does it mean? It says, Arami oivet avi. Arami is currently, it doesn't say Avat Avi, he destroyed my father's, he's destroying him. What does that mean, destroying him now? So he gives a mashal to a statue. There was a statue in the square of the city, and there was a person that would come every night with a hammer and a chisel, a little hammer, a little chisel, and he'd chip away at the statue, little by little by little. He'd chip away at the statue, he didn't do more. So somebody came over and said, you know, if you want to, what are you trying to do? He said, I'm trying to knock down the statue. So he said, you want to knock down the statue? I got a better idea. I'll get you a sledgehammer, you give a zazetz, and you'll knock down the statue. He said, yeah, but then the police will notice. I'll be noticed. This way I'm doing it invidiously, insidiously, and nobody's noticing. I'm doing quietly doing it, and all of a sudden I'll be undermined, and one day it's going to go down. Suck them, the siv, thus is loving. Loving Arami is that type of... He's going to destroy us in a way that we're not even, it's going to be like the razor, but we're not even know it. And it's not going to be the anti-Semite doing it. If you walk into a department store during a certain time of the year and you listen to the music, right, the music is going into you. Was there somebody, were the people who were playing the music in that department store thinking about Jews? They had nothing to do with you. If they put up a billboard there with something that you shouldn't look at, and you're driving, you have no choice, you know, otherwise you'll crash the car, you can't close your eyes, and you'll see it. I know of a certain tzaddik who does, Dafka never learned to drive because he said, if I'm going to learn to drive, I have no choice, I'm going to have to look. So I'd rather not drive. So take an Uber, you know, they'll drive me. So therefore, there's so many ways in which we're affected by society, which is, that's some anti-Semitism. It is taking our Semite, who we are as Yidden, and it's destroying who we are as Yidden. So therefore, that's something that we always have to be aware of. This Tuesday, I spoke on the topic in the neighborhood shir, so they asked me to speak, I was zeichet to speak there, and the topic was trade secrets for surviving the gullus. And one of them is to know when these things are happening, and to try and consciously do something to make ourselves aware, to protect ourselves that it shouldn't happen. So to understand that anti-Semitism just with an anti-Semite, it can be with a stealth, with a loven. And interesting enough, Rabbi Greenblatt pointed out that by Esav, you see, he says, I'm going to kill Esav, I'm going to kill my brother. He's out in the open. He's saying it. Loven? All sweet-tongued stuff comes out of loven. Oh my, how can you work for me without pay? You know, he's very silver-tongued loving. Different person. And you don't see it. So it's that even stealth. Even the tyrant doesn't come out with it. And Lavan, what was his name? Lavan. What's Lavan?
White.
White. Lavan was the color of white. pure. So Lavan himself put on that pure, I'm the pure Lavan, I'm the edel, the person, and underneath he's undermining him. Sometimes you have to watch out very much for that. So that's Lavan. So it says over here, Ubnei Yisrael, Paro of a Yishutz of a Yirba of Yatva, Ma'ay Ma'ay, Vatimali Haaretz Aysam, they then entered a dangerous period. Because once they were so much out there and there was so much in the culture, they were no longer in Goshen. When you're in Goshen, right, the municipality of Goshen probably had no billboards allowed on the buses. They, who knows what they had to make sure that everything should be good. It was a different, you were by yourself. But once Vatimale Arts Isam, they filled the land, Vayakim Melechadish, now there's a Melechadish. Now the Yetzahar has just gotten renewed vigor. Because now he can get inside your kishkas and you won't even notice it. It'll be like the razor blade cut, which is very painful, but you didn't even notice that you had it. Okay, so that's a little bit of Parshas Shmos. Now let's go on to Parshas Ve'era, and we will continue also in this vein of explaining a little bit of how to survive, as we said, in the Golus. So let's start, open your Chumash again, move it to page 151. Ve'ela Shmais B'nei Yisrael B'ay Mitzrayim, and these are the names of the B'nei Yisrael that came to Mitzrayim. Es Yaakov Ishu Beiso Bo, Yaakov and all of his father's house came. And it says, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisar, Gazul, and Binyamin, Daman, Atal, Gad, Vasher, and so on. Vayikom Nefesh, Yaitzi, Yerach, Yaakov, Shivim, Nefesh, and that's where we have the famous 70 souls. Yaitzi, Mitzrayim, and two Pshatim, the 70 souls. One is, of course, it was Yocheved, who was born Bein HaChaimus. And the second pshat is the 70th person was Hushim ben Don. Because he was such a great tzaddik, he counted, because it doesn't say Hushim is plural. Hushim and Don is plural, the word Hushim. And therefore some say that he counted as two people. So when you count, you know, if you ever had, as a kid, you know, they say raise your arms, you raise two hands, and you counted as two people. So that's the other pshat. So I saw in the Hesped, that Rabbi Beryl Wein, I'm sure we've all heard of Rabbi Beryl Wein. The Hesped Rabbi Beryl Wein said on Rabbi Levin, we spoke about Rabbi Levin, if you remember, a few weeks ago, my Rosh Hashiva. What?
He was related. He was his...
He was brother-in-law.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, he was brother-in-law. Rabbi Beryl Wein was, I think his sister was Rabbi Levin's... His wife was Rabbi Levin's sister, I think. So anyway, so he said a beautiful, beautiful pshat, which I was very taken by. And I think this is something that we could learn a lot from. It says like this. The last Mishnah in the Masechta Sota is a very fascinating Mishnah. The Mishnah tells us a number of era, how an era ends. That when the last person dies of a certain era, that's considered that person the end of the era. So for example, in the Holocaust, so people always, when you go to the survivor of a Holocaust, now they say that's the end of an era. Because he was the oldest person, or she was the oldest person in their mishpacha, or maybe even their city. And eventually the whole era of Holocaust survivors is going to end. Even the one lasts 115 years old. I remember when I was a little boy, I think the last soldier, or the last person alive from the Civil War was Nifter. I think the last person was alive time of Civil War was Nifter. They made a big deal out of it. Or the last Civil War widow passed away in 2011, which was very interesting. How did that happen? Because in the early 1920s, there was a veteran who was 85 or 89 years old or something, and a woman, 20, married him. She could get the benefits. And she passed away in 2011, a couple of years ago. So it made a big deal out of it. So it tells us when things end. So the Gemara says a whole series. Mishameis Rabbi Batlu Meishli Mishalim. When Rabbi Meir died, those who made Mishalim died. Mishameis Ben Azai Batlu Shakdonim. When Ben Azai the Shakdonim, the ones who were the Masmidim died. Mishameis Ben Zayma Batlu Adarshanim. There was nobody could darshan anymore like him. At each Tekufa, somebody died, and that was the end of the Tekufa. And then there's one that everybody talks about, because it's so incredible and so astonishing. It says, Mishmeis Rebbe, when Rebbe died, Batla Nova, humility died. That was the end of the era of people that we could say were truly, truly humble. So the Gemara says, that's the last Gemara in the Sefer Sota. So last Gemaras are the ones that they talk over by a Siyum. So they always get a lot of play. They're very lucky. So the Gemara says, Amar le Rabbi Yaisa Tana. Rabbi Yaisa told the Tana, you know, you gave us this whole list, a whole settle of people, you know, when they died and so on. So Amar le Rabbi Yaisa Tana, so Rabbi Yaisa said to the Tana, Lotisni Anova. Don't learn the word Anova. Don't learn the last humble person died. Do'ikano. What about me? I'm an Anuf. I'm humble. So of course, this is so astonishing a statement. I mean, because the very definition of a humble person is not somebody who says, if somebody says I'm humble, they're by definition not humble, right? You know, I remember when we were kids, we used to have a joke that said, I used to be conceited, but now I'm perfect. You know, like, so it, you know, so you can't say the last humble person died, except, but what about me? You know, so Rashi says, in case you didn't understand it, Rashi says, Dika anodas mi shani anvasa, because I'm humble. Which normally Rashi, was, I mean, that's what he said. So what's Rashi explaining? Because it must have been, you can't believe it. So what is it, why would somebody say that I'm humble? So one shot we've said here in the Shir, with the story of Rabbi Yaakov Feitman. If you remember, Rabbi Yaakov Feitman was a Rav at that time in Cleveland, now Rav in Cedarhurst.
He's principal in Brooklyn Torah Academy.
Oh, he's principal. Okay. So Rabbi Feitman was once went to an estate sale, a Sfarim estate sale. Mm-hmm. And he came to, you know, house, which, and the people who met him at the door were not religious. And they took him into a room. And the room was like wall-to-wall Sfarim. Beautiful Sfarim. And they all looked used. And he started to open them up. And he saw on the side all sorts of beautiful writing. And he looks and he sees Chedushei Torah. Meiridik. He was the person who was obviously a huge Talmud Chacham. So he went over to the kids and he says, I got up my guts. And I said, can you please explain to me something? Your father was a great scholar. He was a great Talmud Chacham. How is it you're not even from? What happened? How does it happen? How could it be? So he said, you should know that when our father learned, he used to close the door and never let us see. And when we walk in, he would say, oh, you're disturbing me. He'd start screaming at us, and we'd run out of the room. So we never had any influence from his learning. Not only that, it made a negative impact on us. And that's where we're not from. So Rabbi Feitman said that there's sometimes a person can't be humble. Sometimes, you know, lots of times you go to a shiva afterwards, and they say, oh, and the children say, I can't believe what my father was. I'm hearing stories like, wow. So, but wouldn't it be nice that he heard the story when the father was alive so he could learn from the father? So that he said, Rabbi Feitman, when it comes to your own kids or your own talmidim, you're allowed to be a bal gaiva. So he says, that's the pshat. When Rabbi Yosef said, ad sheba ana, until I came along, there was no anava died, now I'm here. He meant for his Talmidim, so they could understand it. That's one pshat. Rabbi Wein said a different pshat, which is also a very, very beautiful and sensitive pshat. And he said, and I see this is true, when a Rebbe is alive, he has a tremendous hashpa on his Talmidim. Tremendous hashpa. After the Rebbe is not there, the hashpa stays with them, because if they're real Talmidim of his, they carry on his legacy. They carry on who he was. Even they might not be as great as the Rebbe, but the things that the Rebbe taught, they garnered and they gathered from the Rebbe. So he says, when it says Mishmeis Rebbe bat manova, Am Rav Yais vayikanoa. Wait a second, Rebbe died. It's true, and maybe his level of anova, but to say that the ear of anova died, we saw that great anova. And interestingly, Rav Yais was two generations later, so it must have been the Rebbe to the Talmud. And he saw it, we could still feel it. And therefore, please, Tana, take out the word Rebbe, Shemes Rebbe Batlanova, because I saw the greatness of Rebbe. I saw Rebbe's Anova. And he said it in context, we had said by Rebbe Levin, my Rosh Hashiv was Nifter, and his Shleishim was this past Shabbos. He said the same thing over there. He had a Rebbe by the name Rebella Meir Bloch. Rebella Meir Bloch was the one who founded Telz, Nabuch, all his. His family was killed in the Milchama, and he founded Telz Yeshiva. And he sat, and eventually he was such a Talmud to his Rebbe that when I was in Yeshiva, he almost never said anything without it, somewhere along the way, Rebella Meir said, Rebella Meir did. I mean, it was like It was Shogar B'fiv every single minute.
My new house used to quote him in Beis Yaakov of Williamsburg also. I grew up with that.
Oh, so that you see, you grew up with that Nusa. So one of the things Reb Elimeir told him, and I'll just show how it continues, Reb Elimeir told him, when he was a Bacher, he told him, I want you to become the head of Tzira Agudas Yisrael. I want you to head the local Tzira Agudas Yisrael in the yeshiva. So he said, but Rebbe, you know, I do everything I do with my full heart. And if I'm going to do that, I'm going to come to Bittul Torah. I'm going to stop learning because I'm going to be so busy doing all this good stuff. I'm going to stop learning. So the Rebbe told him, Reb Elimeir told him, don't worry, I will make sure if I see you're going too far, I'll tell you to stop. He said his Rebbe was nifter a year later, and he used to say, and he never told me to stop, so I didn't. Mm-hmm. And I believe that's a lot of the reason I'm in Agudas Yisrael. Because my Rebbe showed how important it was. I remember when he called me over one day to say, okay, you're going to be a Pirchei leader. You're going to be a Pirchei Agudas Yisrael leader. The Rosh Hashiva Zokt, you know? So, I mean, a personal Karzatai was my Shatkin, so I have to have a Karzatai for that. But in the term of Rebbe Talmud, so I touched Reb Elimeir. Reb Elimeir is not Mace, because I was there, Vayikan Noah, right? I'm still around, and hopefully my kids got it from me. Benjamin, their kids, we got it from them. So eras only end when the hashpa, when the influence of the era ends. If the era continues on in the Talmidim, the Talmidim's Talmidim, the era does not end. So he said, that's what he said, Amr of Yosef. So I was thinking with that, we can understand what it says at the beginning of the Sedra. It says, Ve'elu Shmais B'nei Yisrael Abayim Mitzrayim, as Yaakov Ishu Beisobo, and then, I'm sorry, got the wrong parsha. Went back to that. It says, Ve'erel Avram, I sow myself to Avram, El Yitzhak El Yaakov. Why did Hashem say that? Hashem says, you know, I'm unhappy with you. I'm unhappy with you, Moshe Rabbeinu. Why can't you be like Avram and Yitzchak? Right? Now, we know that's pretty rough when you tell a kid, why can't you be like your brother? Okay. It usually doesn't end well. You know, they resent it a little bit. But what he was telling is, Moshe Rabbeinu, you got to be the Talmud. You're the Talmud of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. You're their inheritor. You're their successor. You have to learn from them. You have to be like them. You have to do like them. So because he told them that, so that's why he brought a Rav Yitzchak Yaakov to tell him, you have to be like the people that come before you. Okay, so this is Mamash, I think it's a beautiful chant. I'd like to talk about something else now. Off to a different topic totally, which I saw in the Shvilei Pinchas, which is like one of those things that you don't notice when you learn Psukim, but then somebody points it out to you, and is it an interesting thing? And a wonderful pshat. If you take a look at Perek Zion, Pasuk Hey, I'm sorry, Perek Zion, Pasuk Yud Zion. Perek Zion is going to be Yud Zion Hey. Say, Perek Zion, Pasuk Yud, Perek Zion, Pasuk Yud Zion. That's page 169. Okay. So the pasuk says like this. Says the pasuk, "Koyamar Hashem, Zois Tedim." Remember, he's going now to Paro, and he's going to do the Mak of Dam, and Hashem's giving him instructions. And he says, "Ani Hashem Hinei Anoichi Makya, B'Mata Asher Biyodi Al Hamayim Asher Biyorv Nefkel Dam." I'm going to smite with the Makya that's in my hand, and it's going to hit the water. And what does it say? The maka that's in my hand. Where else was it?
His eyes.
Between his eyes, maybe it was on his head. You know, Pashat Pshat is, when I tell you I'll be there tomorrow, or let's say I'll come over to your office. I don't say, I'm going to walk with my feet over to your office, right? or I'm going to give you this thing. I don't say, I'm going to give you this thing with my hand. Of course, that's what it means. So why does the pasuk say that Hinanoichi Makeh B'Mata Asher B'Yodi? I'm going to give the Makeh that is my hands. Okay, now let's go to Parshas B'Shalach. Let's go over to page 200. And here we got Yod Zayin Pasuk Hei, 201. Yod Zayin Pasuk Hei. So here the pasuk tells you that he's about to give the water. So Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu that he's going to smite the rock. Remember, this is the first time around, so you don't have any problems with hitting the rock. Second time, not supposed to hit the rock. First time, he hit the rock. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Avor lifnei ha'am, go in front of the nation, v'kach itcha, and take mizikni Yisrael, umatcha Asher hikisa by esa yor kach biyodecha. And this is really contorted. He says, okay, I want you to take the matah. So in case you have a drawer full of matas, you know, you got a closet, his stick closet, his matah closet, staff closet. It says, matka asher kisa by esa yor, take the matah that you smoked the river with, you smoked the Nile with, to make blood. What does that got to do with anything? I want you to take the maka and hit the stick. What's the difference? Is maka that maka, this maka. And then it says, kap yodech, again, take in your hand. So what is all this taking in the hand and smiting with? So listen to what he says. It says an amazing pshat. He brings from the Mekubal, from the Sefer Kilat Maisha, in the name of the Mekubal Reb Shimshon Ostapola. So he says like this. He says, the name of Hashem, what made this makkah special? Was it just because of a piece of wood? It was a stick?
Barishon, no?
It came from Utter Rishon. Okay, that's good. So it's special there. And Moshe Rabbeinu found it because we spoke about this last year, right? It was in the garden by Yisroel. Moshe Rabbeinu was the only one who could pull it out of the garden. But what made it special? What made it special is the Chazal say, because it had the name of Hashem written on it. It had a yud. Hey, Vav, Hey. So because it had the name, that's what gave it its power. And there was like a kvittel or whatever, a kameya, these type of things. You have the Shem Hashem, and that's what gives it its power. So he says that when it says Yud Kei Vav Kei, it's the Midas HaRachman, right? Yud Kei Vav Kei is Midas HaRachman, it's the Mida of Mercy. As it says, and it's a simon for the words in Tillim, Tzadik Tes, Yismucha Hashmayim V'Sogel Oretz. Matter of fact, it's interesting. You go in the beginning of many Sfarim. It starts with the Yud Kei Vav Kei. It's a minute to have a Shem Hashem at the beginning of the Hagdama of the Sefer. It says Yismucha Hashmayim V'Sogel Oretz. So therefore, if you have that matah, and it's written on the matah, the name of Hashem, that's Midas HaRachman. And therefore, use the matah for that. It'll go for good things. Okay. What if you read the matah the other way up? And you read it backward, the Shem Hashem, right? You go, Hey Vav, Hey Yud. So that's Midas HaDin, because it's the opposite of Midas HaRachman. So depending on which way you're holding the matah, it depends whether it'll be a matah of Rachman or matah of Din. So if you're holding it like this, from the top, Yud Kei Vav Kei, Rachman. If you're holding it from the bottom, it's the other way around, and you go up. Isn't this interesting? Fascinating. So he says like this. This is Mamish Pshat in the Pesukim. The first time Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, you want to smite the or? Kach es amach biyodecha. Take it not in the normal way, but take it biyodecha, that everybody should see that you're holding it with the side of din. And in that way you're going to smite the or, because you smite the or with din. On the other hand, Parshas B'Shalach, he says, take that stick that you smote the river with, and then to take it in your hand. Kach yodecha, take that part, now you're holding it by the other part. And then it becomes Midas HaRachman. So the same matah that could go and destroy the river is the same matah that could bring water from the rock. Because it's a matah, depending on which way you read the matah, says Rav Shimon Ostapola, if that matah is a matah of din, that matah is a matah of rachman. So that's how he learned it. So we see an amazing thing. And I think that we all have a matah in our hands. We all have something in our hands. And we all have the ability to take that and turn it from rachman to din. And you look at the matah, these matahs, all over the place. I mean, everybody's got a matah in those days, right? They're all taking the matah and doing things with it. But what that matah represents is up to us. If we hold the matah on top, it'll be rachman. If we hold the matah on the bottom, rachman slan, it could be the opposite, it could be din. Okay, so we have time. Oh, good. So we have some time. Okay, so let's do two little more things. So, in the beginning of the parasha, it says Ve'era of Avram and El Yitzhak of Yaakov. He says, I appeared to Avram Yitzhak Yaakov. And then the psukim go on to talk about how Moshe Rabbeinu becomes frustrated. And Moshe Rabbeinu says they're not going to listen to me. They're just too kaitzer ruach. And then Paro, Hashem says, okay, now go to Paro. Moshe Rabbeinu says, if Bnei Yisrael won't listen to me, Paro's going to listen to me. Bnei Yisrael's my people. Paro's my enemy. Why should he listen to me? So the question is that l'chayra, there's a big difference. The Bnei Yisrael, it says, mikaitzer ruach, they couldn't do it because they were so, you know, tzedreit. What can I tell you? They were upside down, you know? Whereas Paro was sitting in his palace. So why should he listen? So he says, the pshat is, Galinsky says, very nice. He says, because Paro suffered intentionally from cognitive dissonance. Paro was a man of sheker. He lived a life of sheker. He went every day, he made himself a deity. But in order to cover up that he was a deity, he used to go down to the Nile to take care of his needs every day. So we see that he knew he was a fake. So why did he do it? Because he was a man of sheker. He lived a life of sheker. So for him to be able to deny things, no big deal. Ah, he knows the truth is the other way. Still no big deal. So we make fun of Paro. And he says Galinsky, let's take a look at us. We know Lashon Hara is Aser. So why do we keep doing it? We know we're supposed to daven with kavana and say every word. Why don't we do it? Because we unfortunately have fallen into the same trap as a Paro. Just like Paro knowingly denied things, even though he was knew the truth, so too, unfortunately, we're sort of stuck in the same place, and we can deny the truth even though when we know the truth. So it's a very big lesson to learn from Paro. Just like the Kal Vachomer, Paro knew it, but he could still deny it. So we can know things, unfortunately, we can still deny them. Let's go on to the last makkah of our parsha. It talks about the Heiliger makkah of Barad, the makkah of Hail. And the makkah of Hail is interesting. It's different than every other makkah. Very different. In a few different ways. It's the only makkah, take a look in page 175. And we see that Paro actually starts to cave a little bit. He starts to give in. And not only that, we say that the makkah of Barad is like all the makkahs put together. So how does it work? How does it that Paro is starting to give in over here, and then he like bucks himself up later, and that the Barad is considered so dangerous in such a way that's considered as connected all the makkahs? So what? There are many pshatim said on this, by the way. Just read what he says. More troubling is Paro's response. After the makkah strikes, Mitzrayim calls Moshe and Aaron and tells them, in Pasuk, let's take a Pasuk, Chav Zayin. Let's see what Paro says. Read his words, Paro in his own words. Vayishla Paro v'yikul v'mayishla Aaron v'yom aleim. Chatasi apam Hashem, hatzari v'ani v'am yirashayim. Easy. I'm a Rasha, that's it, Hashem's right, I'm wrong. He didn't say this before, and he didn't say it after. So what shook them up so much about it? So naturally, being Rabbi Mordechai Kamenetsky tells one of these stories, a story from Paul Harvey, which is always a cute story. He says there was a fellow by the name William and with his Aunt Caroline, and they were very, very wealthy and they used to feud with each other. They didn't get along, lived next door to each other. And his Aunt Caroline was very popular and had carriages coming in and out of her house at all hours and parties and stuff. And he was like this Nabuchal that lived next door, and he was very upset about it. After the Zayd, I guess, passed away, he inherited $100 million. And he went and he bought, to show her up, he went and he bought a house with 530 rooms, 350 baths, and 970 employees. For who? Well, we'll see in a second. You got it. We'll see for who. He says, it would be his grandest, most elegant guest house of its kind. More carriages would pull up to his home in a day than to his aunt's mansion in a month. Her home would pale in comparison, and the tumult all would force her to move. Well, he was right that she was jealous, but she decided she'll build in next to her, says her nephew's hotel. I guess he must turn the hotel, which answers what he did with it. She decided to build her own, a better hotel. And she bought more elegant, nicer rooms, better service, and they were mom's going at it. So the manager of one of the hotels said, you know, if they would work together, How much better this could be? I mean, what did they get from fighting with each other? So he went and he sat them down and he got them together and he decided to stop fighting, and they joined their two hotels, and the two people were William Waldorf and Carolyn Astor. And that is the hotel we know as the Waldorf Astoria. That's the story. So he says, because they were able to work together despite all the fighting, Barad showed that Aish and Mayim could work together. Paro could handle things which were ultimately blood in the water, frogs, lice. These were all things that somehow you could figure out that, you know, some scientific something or other. But that you could put fire and water together, that already blew him. And he realized that that's too much, and he was forced to admit. So the Abish of the Holfin, that just like Paro looked at the Bria and he saw the Barad, and he admitted, we should all be Zaycha, that we should always admit to whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu does for us, and we should thank him. And if he does something that's perplexing, we should know, Me'esh Hashem Ha'yisah Zos, and we don't understand. So thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
And we'll all have a good week. I'm not sure how to turn it off.
Good Shabbos.
And then the call to... Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Let's get her.
Yeah, can you come turn it off, please? You know, we forgot, I didn't realize, because we didn't send the email out. We always send the email, but I thought there was no share, but the last week, that's why we didn't.
That's why.
Okay,
next week we have to move on.
We have to get to the office.
So,
yeah, she's good, she's fine.
Just hang up.
No, the computer. Oh, hang up. Yeah, I forgot the computer. Anyway, thank you so much.
Okay.
Okay. Interesting.